Krishna. Lay your hands on me. Lay your hands on me. Lay your hands on me.
Amen.
Lay your hands on me. Lay your hands on me. Lay your hands on me.
Holy God, can you give that woman the kind of joy she had right there?
Come on!
Make a joyful noise unto the Lord.
To be here.
I'm a cowboy.
I'm a cowboy. I have a gang of cowboy friends.
On a steel horse I ride. Wanted, wanted, dead or alive.
I'm John Bon Jovi, and I've been given a script to talk to you about drugs, rock and roll, having fun, a good time, and all that good stuff. Well, I'll tell you what, drugs is not a part of my everyday routine. It's not everyday fun. It's not good for you. All right? So listen, think twice before you do drugs, because there ain't no winners out there doing it.
Hey, you're listening to Rock and or Roll, and today we have the return of frequent guest. It's been a while, Brian. Hey, Brian Sword, what's up?
Hey, man, happy to be back. Always thrilled to be on your show.
Yeah, and it's been a long time since we did a worst of episode. Well, I guess it was Van Halen with Greg Renoff, right? The last time we did worst of, so.
He was so miserable on that episode. It was brilliant.
And so today we're doing the worst of Bon Jovi in the 80s. But first we should talk about the return of the double stop.
Yes.
So, of course, the reason we know each other is because we were both podcasters. But then, you know, you took a very extended hiatus, even longer than mine. And
yeah,
I'm so glad it's back, though. It was always a great show. I love listening to these kind of interviews that guys like you do that are just very in-depth and nerdy. And I love how podcasts like yours and The Hustle and even mine sometimes, if you talk to these guys long enough or just let them talk, you get these stories that probably they've never told before that are just gold. Like,
yeah,
when you talk to Vinny Appice, he tells this story about him and Ronnie James Dio going to Home Depot so they can fix the sprinkler head. Whose house was that at?
Jeff Pilson.
Yeah. I mean, he's never told that story before, right? And that is just an amazing story, because you get the picture Ronnie Dio walking through Home Depot and then fixing a sprinkler head. I mean, you know, that's just such a great story. And I just love, you know, listening to those kind of, I mean, there was all kinds of great stuff in the Vinny Appice interview, but I just remember hearing that story and thinking, man, this is the kind of story you get on these podcasts where we, you know.
Oh, yeah. He was awesome. Yeah, I am absolutely thrilled to have the show back. It was a much, much, much longer break than I ever thought I would take. But, yeah, it's back. I've done 6 episodes now, and those are, y'all, you know, a good hour interviews for the most part. So it's really great to get back in the groove and start talking to these guys again, because, man, the stories they have are unbelievable.
You never know. You never know the stories you're going to get. That's why it's great that all these, you know, it's just a different kind of interview format with the podcasts that are done by someone like you. It's not just a fluff piece or an interview just to promote something. It's so you always get just really great details and you learn new things. And so yeah, it's great that the show's back. I'm really happy about that.
Thanks, bud. Yeah, I'm thrilled to be back, and the response has been great, so it's fantastic.
Yeah, were you surprised? I mean, I took like a year and a half off, and when I came back, it seemed like most of the people were still there. I was surprised. I was worried that, you know, everybody would have moved on by then, but they're all still there for the most
part. Like I have my diehard still there. Like, I was gone. I was the odd episode here and there for like 8 years.
Was it that long?
I did my first 105 episodes or something like that within a few years. And then my youngest son was born, and I kind of, everything got too crazy and I shut it down. And then we moved across the country, and it was, you know, life got crazy. And then when I went back to it, it's just like, yeah, it's been a long time. So the diehards were still there. And certainly, like, the messages I got were, you know, pretty overwhelming. There's a lot of people that were really happy it was back, which was really cool. But luckily, the rock news press really kind of jumped on, like, the Vinny Appice one. You know, that lots of different rock news jumped on some of the stuff from that. And that's helping getting the word out that it's back. So people are, you know, quickly finding that I'm back again. So it's catching up really quick.
Oh, awesome. And do you have some good stuff coming up? Are you excited about interviews you have coming up?
Yeah, I've got lots of irons in the fire, lots of interview requests out. Lots of cool people coming, for sure.
Cool. So today we're going to talk about the worst of Bon Jovi in the 80s. And so I just watched, I don't know, have you watched any of the new Hulu documentary?
I have not seen it yet, but I hear it's pretty amazing.
So they came out with a 4-part documentary that just came out on Hulu. And yeah, it's fine. They, you know... It's pretty interesting with Richie. Seems like Richie is really pissed.
It's what I've heard, yeah.
And I don't know why. I don't know what. They definitely don't go into it. Because, I mean, they basically say he left because he didn't want to leave his daughter and go on tour or something. But he's obviously mad about something. And yeah. They don't go into it. So I don't know what's going on there. But it seems like Richie is pissed. And it seems like John would take him back right now.
The Bon Jovi brand isn't what it was.
No.
And if Sambora came back, that would cause a lot of excitement.
Yeah.
And would sell a lot of concert tickets.
Yeah.
You know, because Richie Sambora was the backbone of that band musically. Like, you know, so to lose him is a massive loss. And Phil X is amazing. But there is only one guitar player for Bon Jovi, and that's Sambora.
Yeah, it's not Bon Jovi without...
No, it's a solo band at that point.
Yeah. So I wonder what that story is, but they don't tell it in the documentary.
It's interesting, because when I interviewed Mike Frazier, who was the engineer on those early Bon Jovi records, I'm pretty sure he said the first, on Slippery When Wet, when they came in, they were a brotherhood. It was a gang, and they recorded that way, and it was great. And by New Jersey, he said they weren't. I'm pretty sure it was Mike Frazier who told me that. Hmm. But, you know, at that point, John Bon Jovi was in charge and it was his deal, and they were not a band of brothers anymore. You know, as soon as they became massive, then he took the reins and that was it. Even though I'm sure he was always in charge to a degree, but it was not a band of brothers anymore. So the dynamic changed very early in that band, where I think Richie was probably internally not the equal partner that he would have liked to have been.
Yeah, I'm not sure what their business relationship ever was, because as far as I know, it was just John that got the record deal. And then he put the band together afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder what their business relationship ever was. You know,
yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, John Bon Jovi comes across as this really nice, cool guy. But then I think about the story of him taking Skid Row's publishing.
Sure.
Or, I don't know. There's some things that I find very troublesome. The whole Doc McGee thing, too.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know what his deal was with Cinderella, too, but he was part of bringing them in.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, you know, he has a restaurant.
Yeah.
That, you know, basically feeds the homeless.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, there's much more to it than that.
Yeah. I know, I'm torn about him. That man, the Skid Row thing has always really bugged me, though.
Yeah.
Because that's so fucking low. Because he knows what it is to try to break through in the industry. And then, because what I have heard is that he took their publishing, basically, to get them, to help them get a record deal.
Yeah. Now, I heard that, too. Now, I don't know if it's... He took a chunk of it, or if he took, and that became the story. Became he took all of it.
Yeah.
Or,
well, there's the
what?
There's
know?
The David Konow book where he says that he took all of it for the first two albums, and then they got it back on the third album.
Jeez.
I don't know. You know, I don't know what's true, but Sebastian has talked about it too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just really low to me. Yeah. That just, I don't know. That's not a sign of a good person to me. But yeah, you're right. I mean, he does have that restaurant and everything. But
legend has it that Skid Row got its big opportunity from Bon Jovi.
That's true.
But Bon Jovi got all the money.
Well, that's true.
So how did that work out for you? I mean,
no, but then here's the honest to God truth. That is true that we signed a
publishing deal.
Deal with him. And in order for us to sign it, he would take us on his tour. And we were just a bunch of nobodies. So let's go on tour in arenas. I mean, that doesn't happen every day.
Okay, but what I thought it sounded like is that the publishing deal with Bon Jovi was not a record deal. So, like, what you need is a record deal. What do you need a publishing deal for?
To get on tour with Bon Jovi. Yeah. Like that's what it was.
Because that just sounds to me like some Suge Knight holding Vanilla Ice off the balcony.
Yeah, totally.
No, I mean, nobody held me off the balcony, but no, all I can say about it is that there were so many bands at that time, right? There was so many bands. And the ones that made it were very far and few between. Like, making it was like a unicorn. And I understand what you're saying, but here's what we did. We had a bit. I quit the fucking band when I understood what we signed. I said, I'm not doing this again. I'm not doing this again. So we had a big meeting with the lawyer Michael Guido, who's now Jay-Z's like right hand business guy. He was our lawyer then, and I said, I'm quitting unless we're redoing the whole thing with Bon Jovi, and I get 25% of everything in the band. And there's five guys in the band, so that was kind of ballsy. But they said okay. And then our next record, so we redid that. We got out of that. And then our next record debuted at number one on Billboard. And it didn't sell quite as many as the first, but it did very well.
That's the second record.
Yeah, Slave to the Grind.
So you got in there and fixed that pretty quickly.
Right. Well, I just said I'm not doing it again. So yeah. I was like, I'm out. So.
Yeah, I mean, my Bon Jovi story is, well, I mean, I've talked a lot on the podcast about my uncle, who was a big part, played a big role in getting me into music. And a lot of my early exposure to stuff was his collection. And he actually had the first two Bon Jovi albums before Slippery When Wet came out.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't really, and I know I did listen to them because I would just, he lived with my grandma and my mom would take us there every Sunday, and I'd have to sit at my grandma's house almost every Sunday. And so I would just listen to my uncle's tapes. But then I remember, I have one memory I have is, I was at the, so I know You Could Love a Bad Name came out in July 86, and then the album came out in August. And I can remember being at the public pool with my friend Paul and my brother, and we were singing Shot Through the Heart. And we were like, what is that? The song was stuck in our head, but we didn't even know what it was. We must have just either heard it on the radio or seen the video. But I remember we were singing it because it was stuck in our head, but we were like, what is that? What is that song? I still remember that. So it was a total earworm. And then then for my 13th birthday in February 87, one of my cousins or something gave me Top Gun and Slippery When Wet. And it wasn't like because I asked for them. It was just that's what was popular. And so they bought me a couple tapes. And so I had Slippery When Wet, but it wasn't really by choice. And then I did listen to it at the time. But like by the time New Jersey came out, I did not buy New Jersey at the time. It's like Bon Jovi weren't one of my bands then. I didn't really care about Bon Jovi. I have all the records now, but like I know when New Jersey was new, I didn't care. Wasn't into it. So, but yeah, I mean, I had Slippery When Wet, but who didn't, you know, there was, I don't have it. I don't know. I don't know if I ever digitized it or not, but I had an old tape at one point where I was on there when I was like 13 singing Let It Rock. And it's pretty embarrassing. And if I had it, I would put it on the show, but
of course you would.
I don't know where it is, but it was pretty hilarious. Oh my God. So yeah, I was in the Slippery When Wet when it was new, but it didn't really stick for me. They weren't, when I was a teenager, Bon Jovi were not one of my bands that I was into, even though this was the kind of music I loved then.
My story is pretty similar. My brother, who's 3 years older than me, was into Runaway, the first single by Bon Jovi,
yeah,
when it came out. And he watched the music video over and over again. So that meant I didn't like it, because I always didn't want whatever he liked. I'm like, no, I want my own thing. So that was automatically, I'm like, nope, not for me. Then you like that one, then I'm going to find something else. But I was certainly aware of it. And he had the first record, but I never heard it. So he was, when second album came out, and In and Out of Love, I think was that big single on that one.
Yeah.
He was watching the music video tons, and so I didn't care. But when Slippery came out, you couldn't avoid it. I never bought it though, but I heard the singles and I liked them. But I liked Richie Sambora. That was my appeal to that band, as I thought Richie Sambora was great. And it frustrated me because I liked his vocals better than John Bon Jovi's. So I never bought Slippery. New Jersey came out. I didn't like Bad Medicine. I didn't like that song when it came out. I was like, oh, that's kind of shitty. So I never bought the record either. But the other singles I liked, and Richie Sambora was great, but when he did Stranger in This Town, I was all over that solo record. Because I was a Sambora fan, you know. So it was interesting when we came to do this. Like, I'd never actually listened to the records front to back of any of them, even though I was super aware. The first Bon Jovi record I bought was Crossroads. I got that when that came out. I'm like, okay, perfect. I bought that on CD,
mm-hmm,
to get all the songs that I knew, but I didn't care about the rest. Which meant that also when we came to do this, my expectations of the songs I would choose were very different than what the reality was. When we started, I said, okay, I know it's just going to be the first two records. I'm sure they suck. So I'm going to, instead of just, I told you, I'll try to pick one from each album, because I know otherwise I'm just going to pick the first record probably. And you know what? I don't have a single song from the first record on my list. I actually think it's a pretty good record. So yeah. There you go.
Yeah. One thing that I was kind of surprised by, really, because I mean, I know all the albums, but I was expecting there to be more songs that were easy to pick as the worst, but yes. Surprisingly, I actually, most Bon Jovi songs are at least tolerable, if not, most of these 80s Bon Jovi songs are at least tolerable, if not, I like them. And yeah, the first album is total AOR, which is right up my alley. So yeah, there's nothing on the first album that was even close to being in contention for me.
Me neither.
Yeah, the second album I like. Like, I love, I've always loved The Hardest Part Is the Night, and I think In and Out of Love is great. And I like the second album pretty. It's not as good as the first, but yeah, I mean, I was surprised that there weren't a ton of like standout, just songs that I had didn't really remember, and I would be like, oh, this is awful. There wasn't that. It was, yeah.
No, I'm going to beat up on the second album, but it's still not the album I took the most songs from.
Yeah.
And, but that second album to me is a bad Survivor album. I love 80s Survivor. That is a bad version of 80s Survivor to me, where it's not nearly as good as a Survivor record. That's what I hear when I listen to it.
It's definitely got the kind of the sophomore slump kind of vibes going on. Like, they didn't have enough songs, which they pretty much say in the documentary, and John obviously doesn't like that second album very much. And mm-hmm, I think it was a case of they probably only had half an album's worth of songs, and then they had to come up with some other shit pretty quick.
Yeah, exactly.
To get it done.
Come off tour and have to go right to the studio, and they weren't really ready.
And then that's definitely why they were like looking for someone like Desmond Child to help when it came time for the next one.
Another thing I thought was interesting when listening to these records in the deeper cuts that I'd never really heard before it was like you could see the seeds of late era Bon Jovi in those early albums. All the songs I don't like, you could see like that's where a new Bon Jovi record directly lines back to the kind of the crappier songs on the first few records. Maybe those were the songs that he had more control over or something. I don't know, but it's interesting. And also the Bruce Springsteen stuff, like his attempts to be Bruce, you really hear it in some of those songs.
Yeah, that's one thing I learned from the documentary that I didn't realize is just how much he was copying Bruce Springsteen. He had a band called like Atlantic City Expressway or something like that.
Oh, really?
It was like John Bon Jovi and the Atlantic City, and it was this huge band with like 10 guys, and they were just doing Bruce and Southside Johnny. That's exactly, like, it was just a carbon copy. Like, that's what he was doing for a while.
And you can hear it. You can hear it in some of the deep cuts. In the deep cuts of these albums, you can hear his attempt to be Bruce. Like, it's clear as day he's trying to be Bruce. Oh, Christ, Professor Roy played on the first record. You know, so there you go. Like, right from the beginning, he was pulling in Bruce whenever he could.
Yeah. I think Runaway is amazing. Like, I love that song.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and the story behind it is really cool. I have that record that it first came out on a radio station compilation, WAPP, I think it is. Shoot 'Em Down by Twisted Sister is also on there. Came out in like 1980 or 81. And he's listed as John Bon Jovi. You know, his name is spelled correctly on that. And it's not the band yet. But it is the version, I think, that's on the record. But none of the guys played on that. None of the other...
No.
Well, David Bryan, maybe. He's probably...
But Aldo Nova played on a lot of the guitar on that first record, too.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great story, that how he you know, puts that song together and then manages to turn that into a career. And it is a great song. Sure. And, but there's not much Bruce in that song. So he's totally playing to the times, and it seems like it's pretty calculated, because it's if you go listen to what he was doing before that, it's very different. But, you know, I think he was just on Fresh Air. I don't know if it was in the documentary on Fresh Air where he's like, you know, he's talking about how they were associated with hard rock and hair metal. He's like, I wasn't a fan of any of those bands. I didn't buy their records. He's trying to separate Bon Jovi from the rest of that. But that's exactly what he was doing in the 80s.
Of course it was.
I mean, you know, he wants to act like Bon Jovi had more artistic integrity or something, but where? Where in the 80s? Where is it? Where are they any different?
Come on. The album's called Slippery When Wet, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
What's funny, they wanted to call it Wanted Dead or Alive, and in the documentary, Doc McGee's like, I was like, that's fucking stupid. You're not fucking cowboys. You're rock stars. You know? There's a couple times in the documentary where Doc McGee's just like, and I told him, that's fucking stupid. Oh, it was about his acting career, too, when John Bon Jovi was trying to be an actor. And that might have been the end of the relationship with Doc McGee, when Doc McGee was like, I told him, you're not an actor. You're a rock star. Stop that bullshit. You know? And he was right. You know, John Bon Jovi's acting career didn't go anywhere. Yeah, I just saw a clip on YouTube. What he was on Rich Eisen as some sports talk guy or something, I think.
Okay.
But I just saw a clip on YouTube because it said, he tells a story about Michael Jackson. But he was talking about he had a cameo in Young Guns 2 or something. And Rich Eisen was like, yeah, is that the only movie you were ever in? Which is pretty funny, because John Bon Jovi tried to have this big acting career, and then that shows how how little success he actually had with it, where Rich Eisen has no idea that he even tried. So, because then he's like, I was in 12 films, you know? But, yeah. So should we get to our lists of our... So we picked the five worst Bon Jovi songs of the 80s. So we're basically just dealing with four albums here. So do you want to go first with your number five?
So when I went to make my list, I went through all the albums and then I made notes on every song I didn't like, which was actually 11 songs. And nothing off the first record made that 11.
Yeah.
Which, again, was my biggest surprise because I was sure that first record was going to be a punching bag for me. And so one of the songs, Love for Sale from New Jersey, we both agreed to disqualify because it's like obviously not even a real song.
Yeah, that's too easy of a number one and takes like the fun out of it. Yeah,
too obvious, right? So so we disqualified that, which got me down to 10. So from then I had to go through again and listen, listen pretty hard and make my, list down to five. So my number five song is another one that we potentially could have disqualified, which is why I put it at five, which is Ride Cowboy Ride from New Jersey. The good thing about it is that it's only a minute 24, and I'm sure it's the opening track on side two of the vinyl is more of a lead into the next song. So it's ultimately kind of harmless, but I feel bad for the people who have it on vinyl because that means they can't just skip it. They have to hear the thing. Like, I don't even know what the point of it was, really. It's just this shitty little acoustic song. Nobody wants to hear that. And plus, it leads into another kind of shitty song. So that would have been an easy number one for me, but I just, that doesn't seem in the spirit of the thing, to be fair. So I put it for number five.
Yeah, I don't think I even counted that as a song. It's more like an intro or an interlude or something. But yeah, it's totally pointless.
But they should have left it off the record. It was for sure.
It was kind of the same for me. What I do is I'll just drop whatever I think are contenders into a playlist and see what I end up with. And I think I only ended up with seven. So then I just had to narrow it down to five and put them in order. And so my number five is not even a horrible song, in my opinion, but I just think it's dumb and generic and formulaic and kind of nonsense. Social Disease from Slippery When Wet.
You can read it.
it's just this generic bluesy hair metal thing with horns, and the chorus, just no hooks on the chorus. So what I wrote down for this is it's just kind of lazy and stupid. And I mean, it's like, I guess it's the definition of filler, really. Because it seems like it was an easy song, easy to write and record, and you know, then they lay these horns on there, which I don't think they're even real. I didn't look at the credits, but they're probably just from a synth. So I just think it's a dumb song. And I mean, there's plenty of dumb songs from this era that I like. So that's not like a disqualifying factor when you're talking about this kind of music. But it's just so blah that it ended up, you know, squeaking its way onto my list. But it's not like I think it's horrible or unlistenable or anything like that. So
yeah, that song didn't even make it to my top 11, but I don't like it. It just felt harmless to me, you know. It's like, it's got a few hooks,
right?
You know what I mean? And there's some good stuff on guitar that I don't mind, so that didn't make it for me. But yeah, it's not a good one either. It just felt middle of the road to me,
right,
with dumb lyrics,
right?
But I'm notoriously, you know, I'm known for not giving a shit about lyrics, so
it's got to be really bad or just distracting or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, what's your number four?
All right, number four for me is Only Lonely from 7800 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, man.
It's just a bad Survivor song. Like, I hear that, all I hear is 80s Survivor. It's so syrupy, and like, there's barely any guitar. I would have been much happier to hear Survivor take on that same song and do something good with it than what Bon Jovi did.
It sure is syrupy, but I do like that song. I'm a sucker for that kind of... Yeah, I mean, it's a total pop song. That's for sure. It's totally cheesy, but I like it. Well, my number four is from the same album, and I remember, so when I first started getting into music, one thing I remember is I used to be able to come home from school in time to see a show on MTV called The Heavy Metal Half Hour, because that's where I saw In My Dreams, which started me down the road to Dokken being, for a lot of my childhood, my second favorite band after Kiss. But I have these memories of other videos. Some of the first videos I saw, I think I was really just wanting to see Kiss without the makeup. It was like what I was like watching to try to see Heaven's on Fire or whatever. But I remember seeing this video early in that time when I was first being exposed to this stuff. And it was the video for Silent Night. We'll be right back.
the Sotheby's. And there's nothing left for goodbyes. We'll just turn and walk away. How could we let it end like this? Just turn and walk away. Should we seal it with a kiss?
It's one of those ballads that has zero actual emotion in it. It's just like so fake and forced and just like, we need a ballad for the album. Let's write one. So there's nothing real about it. It's just such bullshit. But I wrote, at least they didn't call it Jingle Bells. It's like a Silent Night.
All right, number three for me is Blood on Blood from New Jersey.
Oh, no.
My notes on that, garbage. Trying to be Springsteen and failing. This is a bad sign of things to come with the more recent albums. This was one of those tracks I was talking about. Like, you could take that song off this record and put it on the latest Bon Jovi record and it would fit right in of his attempts to be Springsteen.
That is him trying to be Springsteen, but I love that song, actually.
Terrible. You should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah, I think that song's great.
I'm a cowboy. I have a gang of cowboy friends.
Well, my number three, and I'm not just being a contrarian, I'm not picking this on purpose. Like I said, there's not really a lot of 80s Bon Jovi songs that I don't like, actively dislike. I've never, ever liked this song, and it's called Wanted Dead or Alive. I've just always kind of hated it. It's so dumb. So dumb.
Holy shit.
I never liked this song at all.
I'm not a contrarian at all.
I'm not picking it on purpose. I'm not.
Yeah, right.
I agree with Doc McGee. They're not cowboys.
I'm a cowboy. I have a gang of cowboy friends.
This reminds me of when we did the worst of the Beatles, and I decided to only do songs that were number one hits just to be an asshole. Oh my God.
I'm a cowboy.
Come on.
I'm a cowboy.
I'm a cowboy on a steel horse I ride.
Who cares about lyrics? Come on, that's a brilliant song.
Oh, it's so
song.
Bad. I've please. Never liked it. I've just never, ever liked anything about it.
You're the king.
And then the video was just constant.
Ugh. Oh yeah, it was a smash hit for sure.
Yeah, but would it have been if it wasn't following "You Give Love a Bad Name" and "Living on a Prayer"? I don't know.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Ugh.
Oh yeah. Wow. Wow. All right. Good for you. Good for you.
I'm a cowboy. I have a gang of cowboy friends.
Okay. Well, so that happened. Okay. Number two for me is "To the Fire." Cheesy soundtrack music. It feels to me like it should have been on the 80s flick Running Scared. Which I just rewatched recently and is not nearly as good as I remembered it.
Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines, right?
That's right.
What was the big, was it like a fucking, the guy from the Doobie Brothers or something song that was big from that?
Yeah, I think it was.
Michael McDonald?
Yeah, I think it was. Ugh. Yeah, I think, that's right. Yeah, it was him. That's yeah. Right. Yeah. But it was like, it was just a classic 80s soundtrack song, and not one of the good ones. Like, it would have been at the end, the last song on the Rocky IV soundtrack or something. But so cheesy. Holy shit.
Okay, well, my number two is "To the Fire."
Wow.
Yeah. Well,
hey, all right.
What a mess. I wrote down that this is kitchen sink production, like, just all these sound effects and different like synth patches or whatever. I wrote everything about this is a mistake. I mean, I bet John hates this song. He obviously doesn't really like the second album. To me, they were like, we don't have enough songs, and they just made this up in the studio. That's kind of what I get out of it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it was an attempt at like a pop crossover, because it's got these vibes of just like 80s pop music, almost not even hard rock. But one thing interesting that I saw is that on some of the releases, it says parentheses, "I don't want to fall," and then "To the Fire." And what I was thinking is usually the record companies would do that if they thought something was a single and they thought there was like a catchy part in the song where people wouldn't realize what song it was, unless like people would remember the "I don't want to fall" part. So they would put that in parentheses. But usually they would do that if they thought it was going to be like a single. So then I was thinking, did they actually think this was a potential single from the album? Because, yeah, it's so bad.
Okay, number one.
Yeah, we made it to the top.
You already hit it, but mine was number one is Silent Night.
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it is terrible. It's unlistenable. Like, there's literally nothing good about that song. Even Sambora is stumped on how to try to save it. Because on some of the later albums, he kind of, there's some bad songs that he kind of saved for me. Like, I love cheesy 80s music, but this is just too far. The chorus is terrible. Not a single hook to be found in that song.
And you're going to call a song Silent Night?
Silent night, holy night. All is calm. All is bright.
Help me, baby. Just like that. Ow, 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 baby, don't you know I only have to please.
All right, well, my number one was easy because I've always absolutely hated this song. And it's called Lay Your Hands on Me. The first song on New Jersey, which I swear they played this every Headbangers Ball for like 3 years. Just over and over. This is the first song on New Jersey. It's so stupid. I hate it. It's 6 minutes long. I love all the other singles from, well, I don't love Bad Medicine, but I like it. But the other singles from this album were great. And this song is horrible. Ugh. I can't believe that this is the first song on the album, too. It's crazy to me. But, this song has always just annoyed the hell out of me. And way overplayed on MTV, too. Back then, I would watch every Headbangers Ball, and for some reason, I would sit through the stuff I didn't like. I don't know. I don't know why I didn't just change the channel to go back or something, but, man. Ugh. Lay your hands on me.
Yeah. I this song was always just meh for me. I didn't love it. Didn't like it. Didn't hate it. I just didn't care. So it wasn't even close to being on my list because it's just whatever. A middle of the road Bon Jovi song. But it never should have been a hit. Like, it's bizarre that it was. It just shows you how big that band was. They could do anything.
Well, this was probably, I'm not sure what order, if this was the last single or if Living in Sin was the last one. This was late, though, I think. Like, they already had Born to Be My Baby and I'll Be There for You definitely were already singles before, so this is like the fourth or fifth single when they were just milking it. Was there a video for Blood on Blood, too? I think there was.
I don't remember there being one.
Maybe not.
Yeah, the singles were Bad Medicine first, Born to Be My Baby was second, I'll Be There for You third, Lay Your Hands on Me fourth, then Living in Sin fifth.
Right, right.
And they had singles coming out for over a year.
Yeah, they definitely milked that album for a long time.
If you want me to lay my hands on you. What you gotta do is
lay your hands
lay
on me.
Lay your hands come on, come
me.
On, come on.
Lay your hands on me.
And everybody gonna help me now.
Lay your hands
I can hear
on
people
me.
Sing.
Lay your hands
I can hear my
me.
Heart sing.
Lay your hands
if you wanna lay them on, baby, come on now.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Lay your hands on me. If you want me to.
So can I go through my list of 11 songs that were my initial list of songs I hate?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So, and it's just basically in order as I heard them and I put them down. So first album came out Clean, which again, I could not believe that nothing on that album even came close to making my list. So I had Price of Love, Only Lonely, Silent Night, To the Fire from the second record, Without Love, Wild in the Streets, Blood on Without Love and Wild in the Streets, I think those are both the third record.
Mm-hmm.
Blood on Blood, Ride Cowboy Ride, Stick to Your Guns, Night in the Shade, and Love for Sale, all from New Jersey. So for my initial pass, New Jersey had the most songs on my initial list. So yeah, 5 from New Jersey, 4 from 7800 Degrees, and 2 from Slippery.
Yeah, those are definitely Stick to Your Guns and 99 in the Shade. Is that what you said? Those are definitely like the ones from New Jersey that are not memorable. Like I listened to them. I went through everything for this, and I still don't remember now what they're like. But I think I was surprised when I listened to them that I was like, oh, this is fine. You know, it wasn't like something that I was expecting there to be a couple of those songs from New Jersey that I didn't remember that I would be like, oh yeah, this sucks. Mm-hmm. But it really wasn't like that. It's like I could go through that album and just skip the first song, go through that album and it's fine. It's not, there's nothing that really, you know, it's like, ugh, or anything like that. I'm trying to think of what my other ones, I know one was, there's another song from the second album. Oh, King of the Mountain. That was one that was like kind of dumb. It's another one with really a really weird arrangement production, kind of like similar to the Fire going on. And what else? I can't remember what else were contenders. I remember Without Love. That's just kind of a ballad, but it's okay. And yeah, Wild in the Streets. That's all right.
No, it's terrible.
I'm not a huge fan of Never Say Goodbye, but that wasn't a contender. Yeah, I guess I had... It didn't really take much for me to narrow them down. But like, even so, even my number 5 is not a... I don't really have that much of a problem with Social Disease. It's just... So... Yeah, I mean, in the end, I'm surprisingly more tolerant of 80s Bon Jovi than I even realized, because there wasn't a lot of stuff for me that, yeah, I didn't have to do a lot of narrowing down for this list, because there's really not a lot of standouts that are horrible. So now if we were going to do 90s Bon Jovi,
oh boy,
that would be a lot harder.
Yeah, it certainly reaffirmed for me why I never bought the records. Like, I like the singles. I'm that guy with Happy with the Greatest Hits record. I would never listen to these records because there's too many songs in there I don't like. So I don't feel like I missed out by not buying the records when I was a teenager.
Yeah, Bon Jovi's definitely a band where, you know, I'll make a CD of my favorite songs and listen to that. I'm not going to put on a Bon Jovi album and listen to the whole thing.
Yeah, there's no way.
I like some of the songs from Keep the Faith a lot. But after that, there's not much.
No. Song here and there, but not for the whole record, no.
I don't think there's anything I like from these days. I don't think I like that at all.
I'm trying to think what's even on.
I'm pretty much done with Bon Jovi after Keep the Faith. I mean, I was impressed. Yeah. I was impressed by It's My Life when it came out, but oh my God, who wants to ever hear that song again?
Yeah, that was... I liked it too when it came out, but that got killed for me. That was pretty much radio killed.
Yeah. That was definitely a song where when it came out, you're like, oh, they nailed it. They did it, you know?
I
mean, for that kind of a band to be able to have a big hit at that time was
sure.
Pretty impressive.
Yep.
But that was co-written by that Max Martin guy, right? So he was Britney Spears Backstreet Boys.
He still is.
Yeah.
He still is. He still has huge hits.
Yeah.
To this day. Yeah, with pop stars.
It was amazing that Bon Jovi managed to be one of the only bands to actually maintain some sort of relevance for a lot longer, you know. They managed to pull that off, which was now he can act like, "Oh, we weren't like those other bands. I didn't even listen to those other." Yeah, Give me a break.
Yeah, right.
All right, so you can have a new episode of the Double Stop coming soon. Your most most recent one was Mark Ferrari.
Yeah, and that just came out yesterday.
Yeah.
So give me a week and I'll have another, I'm sure.
Awesome.
But this is long term. The show's back. I'm not just gonna do a couple of episodes and fade away.
Right.
So
cool. It's great to have you back.
Thanks, buddy, and thanks for having me back on your show. It's always fun to be on here.
Yeah, anytime.
Hey, Tom. I heard that you're giving your house away or something.
What's the answer, but it's wintertime. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, this isn't just a house, man. It's the place where I grew up.
Oh, I get it. You're giving away your parents' house. That's what are you going to do with your parents?
This is my boyhood home, man. This is Sayreville, New Jersey. This is the place where I learned about the finer things in life, like rock and roll and women.
Down in that basement of yours, I remember that.
It's not Graceland, but this is our own little piece of New Jersey Bon Jovi-style rock and roll history. And I want you to have it.
You can win the house where John Bon Jovi grew up in MTV's Giving Away Bon Jovi's Home Contest. Just watch MTV March 28th when you see three Bon Jovi videos in a row and a message from John. Call the flashing 900 number to win. We'll fly one randomly chosen winner and friend to New Jersey so John himself can conduct a personal tour of the place and hand over the keys and deed to his Graceland. A two-story colonial in beautiful Sayreville, New Jersey, complete with four bedrooms, two and a half baths, and pool. We'll also throw in $10,000 for property taxes, plus a Kawasaki Eliminator motorcycle for cruising your new neighborhood. Then it's off to party with the rest of the band when we fly you to Bon Jovi's next gig.
Dude, you sure you want to go through with this?
What the hell? I'll have other childhoods.
Watch MTV March 28th to win the Bon Jovi home and $10,000.
This MTV contest brought to you by Skittles, Kawasaki, and Stridex Big Pads.
I'll be back.